Narada Muni Vajai Vina Radhika Ramana Nami. Again. Narada Muni Vajai Vina Radhika Ramana Nami. Nama Amani Udita Hoya Bhakata Gita Same Narada Muni Bhajai Vina Radhika Ramana Name.
Verse 2.
Ami Adhara Barishe Ghana Shravana Jugale Giya Bhakata jana sanghang ne nache bori apanahiya Narada muni bhaja vina radhika ramana name Narada muni bhaja vina radhika ramana name Madhura Puri Asava Pashi Mataya Jagata Jane Keho Vakande Keho Vanache Keho Mate Mane Mani Narada Muni Vajavina Radhika Ramana Name Narada Muni Vajadina Radhika Namana Nami Panchavadana Narede Dhori Premira Sangana Ro Kamalasana Nachiya Bole Bole bolo hari bol Narada muni vajadina Radhika namana name Narada muni vajadina Radhika ramana name Sahasranana paramasuke Hari Hari Boli Gaya Nama Prabhave Mati Lo Vishva Nama Rasa Sabe Paya Narada Muni Pajadina Radhika Ramana Name Narada Muni Pajadina Shri Krishna Nama Rasane Spuri Puralo Amarasa Shri Rupa Pade Yachaye Iha Bhakati Vinoda Das Narada Muni Vajadina Radhika Ramana Name Narada
Let's read the translation together, please. When the great soul, Narada Muni, places Vina, the holy name, Radhika Ramana, descends and immediately appears amidst the kirtan of the Lord's devotees. Like a monsoon cloud, the holy name showers nectar in their ears. All the devotees, due to great ecstasy, repeatedly dance to their heart's content. All the people of the universe become maddened upon entering this intoxicating shower of nectar. Some people cry, some dance, and others become fully intoxicated within their minds. Lord Shiva, embracing Narada Muni, repeatedly makes loud joys of ecstatic joy. And Lord Brahma, dancing very ecstatically, says, All of you kindly chant, Hari Bol, Hari Bol. In great happiness, the thousand-faced Ananta Sesha chants, Hari, Hari. By the influence of the transcendental vibration of the holy name, the whole universe becomes ecstatically maddened, and everyone tastes the mellows of the holy name. Thakur Bhaktivinoda, the humble servant of the Lord, says, "The holy name of Krishna has fulfilled all my desires by vibrating on everyone's tongue." Bhaktivinoda, therefore, prays at the feet of Sri Rupa Goswami that the chanting of Hari Nam may continue like always. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur Ki Jai. So we're going to read a fairly short chapter about Narada Muni. But before doing that, I'd like to take a few minutes and discuss, and I'm going to challenge you also a little bit to remember from your previous readings, earlier cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam, as well as the 10th canto, about when and where Narada Muni appears, okay? Ready for that? Both the 10th and also the earlier, and even the later cantos, okay? But before I do, let me make one announcement I forgot to make this morning. Tomorrow evening, Akendra Prabhu is going to be here for an encore performance, Planet Cow Orchestra, 7:30, 8:30, here in the temple room. Okay? So again, tomorrow evening, 7:30, Akendra Prabhu and Tulsi Priya. Okay. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So Narada Muni is the spiritual master of the author of Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Vyasadeva, and therefore is a very central person in the entire text. So we first meet Narada Muni where? Pardon me? Well, Vyasadeva, yes. Correct, yes. Vyasadeva is telling the story of how the Srimad Bhagavatam came to be written, or how he came to write it. So he tells about how he is sitting in his ashram by the bank of the river, feeling very depressed, even though he's written the Mahabharata and all the Vedas and the Upanishads, he's still feeling incomplete. So something is missing and he doesn't know what the problem is. And just then, his Narada Muni appears. So this is Narada's quality. He has this ability to drop in at the appropriate time. I'm expecting him to walk through the door any moment and straighten out whatever problems people have. So he appears first with Vyasadeva and tells him, the reason you're depressed is that you have failed to glorify Krishna directly in all of these books that you've written. And so you need a book that will directly and explicitly take the reader to the essence of the Vedas, which is Krishna. Okay. So then, to give an example of how Krishna affects one's life, Narada tells the story of his own life. And this constitutes the next, fifth and sixth chapter, I believe, of the first canto. He explains how he was the son of a maidservant, and he had no father. His mother was poor and worked very hard to maintain him, and he was her only child. So one rainy season, during the monsoon season, people could not travel in those days. So they had to, wherever they were, they would stay put, those mendicants who would otherwise travel all the year round. So they stayed, this group of traveling mendicants, saintly people, stayed with Narada Muni's mother and he. So during those months of the rainy season, these sages instructed him about Krishna, and that's how he came to learn of Krishna. And then he also took remnants from them and became purified. So in the course of that brief association, he became quite enthusiastic about Krishna consciousness. Then, after the sages left, his mother was tragically killed. She was bitten by a snake when she went to milk a cow. So all of a sudden he was an orphan, just 6 years old, and he had no shelter. So he decided to just go to the mountains, which is traditionally where the saintly people will go, And he headed north. He walked through all the villages and countryside and pastures and everything up to the Himalayas, and then started climbing. And there he entered through deep, very dangerous forests, but he didn't feel frightened. And finally he came to a quiet pond and refreshed himself with the water, sat down in meditation. And then Krishna appeared to him. And he said, "I regret that you will not see me again in this lifetime." This was the one and only opportunity Narada had to see him. So the Lord then instructed him to just go throughout the world and chant Radhika Ramana Nami, the names of Krishna. And Narada said he did that and nothing else for the rest of his life. And then when he died, just as thunder and lightning appear simultaneously, his present body died, and then he attained this eternal blissful body, which allowed him to travel anywhere in the spiritual or material worlds. So that's how Narada came to be the all-traveling spiritual master. So, I don't know what his name was. It doesn't say. But he's only addressed as Narada. So in his subsequent birth, he has this very unusual situation. I don't really know of anyone else who exactly fits in that category, having an eternal body but traveling throughout the material universe. So this is Narada's unique position. But again, being the guru of Vyasa, he's a very, very important figure in the whole book. So Narada's first appearance there is in the first canto, so that we get an introduction to Vyasa's guru right from the beginning. And then he appears again in the first canto. Can anyone remember where? Very good. Yes. Yudhisthira is lamenting after the battle. His uncle Dhritarashtra and his uncle Vidura and his aunt Gandhari all leave in the middle of the night. And so he's very depressed. He's blaming himself. "It's my fault. They left. I didn't treat them properly," although he treated them very nicely. And then Narada comes and says, "No, it's not your fault. And this is where they've gone, and this is what will happen to them. And so you should just stay put and continue doing what you're doing, running the kingdom, until Krishna disappears." So this way, Narada foreshadows for the first time that Krishna would be leaving, something Yudhisthira cannot really fathom. So then again, he actually appears a little bit later in the first canto. Anyone remember? Yes, very good. When the sages are gathering to see King Parikshit, and amongst them is Narada Muni. And it's interesting that none of them could satisfy the king's questions. All these great sages were there to see him leave this world, but none of them could conclusively give him the truth that he wanted before dying. So even Narada wasn't able. Only Shukadev could do this. That was interesting. When Parikshit Maharaj was leaving the world, all the sages in the universe gathered, including Narada Muni, but even he couldn't satisfy the king. Shukadev only could do that. Yes, that's right. He was also present when Bhishma left his body. That's right. So, in this way, in the first canto, he's appearing. In the second canto, anyone remember? It's a pastime. Shukadev was to, yes, and Shukadev, remember, was the son of Vyasadeva. So Vyasa wanted his son to present the Bhagavatam. Okay, so how about in the second canto? Do you remember? Pardon me? Yes, he asks Brahma, who is like his father, yes, for instruction. So Brahma is the guru of Narada and instructs him there in the second canto. Third canto, anyone know of any appearances? He talks about how he was born from Brahma. Right, just say, yes. Yes, Brahma's creation. Okay, I don't remember any others. Maybe you do. So we're going to the fourth canto. He was the spiritual master of one of the great personalities in the fourth canto. Dhruva Maharaj, right, very good. he met Dhruva in the forest when Dhruva was a little boy and ran away from home because his father mistreated him. Who does he run into but Narada Muni? And Narada Muni said, "You're very young, you should go back home." And Dhruva says, "If you can show me Krishna, then show me. Otherwise, you go home." It wasn't quite that disrespectful, but it was like that. Okay, and then, fifth canto? Don't remember him showing up. But in the sixth canto, he appears. Anyone remember this? Huh? Daksha. Daksha has, he has, he is responsible for populating the universe. And so he has 10,000 sons. And they're all practicing brahmachari, preparing themselves for grihastha life. And Narada Muni comes and says, "You know, grihastha life is a lot of trouble." And they all decide, "Okay, well, I'll just stay brahmachari." So Daksha was not happy with this. And he did it again also with another group of Daksha's sons. So finally Daksha cursed him. "So you will not be able to stay more than 3 minutes anywhere you go." 3 minutes. Right? I believe it's 3 minutes. He can only pop in and pop out, and that's what he does for the for the rest of the Bhagavata. So Prabhupada says that the parents of my disciples have cursed me in the same way. Because they have cursed me like this, I am, although I have temples all over the world, I'm unable to stay anywhere. Okay, so after that, in the seventh canto, yes, he instructs Prahlad Maharaj when he's in the womb of his mother, the son of Hiranyakashipu. And Hiranyakashipu is always trying to figure out, how did my son become spiritually corrupted? Then there's also, I believe, another part in the seventh canto where he appears. Yes, right, Prachina Barishat. Oh, that's in the fourth canto, sorry, fourth canto. In the seventh canto, he instructs Maharaj Yudhisthira about how society is organized. Good. Eighth canto. The eighth canto, I believe, is where we read about his previous life. He was a Gandharva. Do you remember his name? In this canto, it comes to explain how he came to be the son of this maidservant in the first place. In his previous life, he had been a god, and he was in the enjoying mood, so he was intoxicated and hanging out with beautiful damsels and singing songs in praise of the demigods. And then he was cursed by whom? I forget. Somebody cursed him because he was being so sensuous. He would take birth as the son of a sudra. So therefore he got his next birth. And in the ninth canto, I don't recall him appearing. Anyone remember? How about the 11th canto? He was present when Sumba pretended to be a pregnant woman. And so he joined in the curse on the Yadu dynasty. And any other appearances, 11th or 12th cantos? I'm not remembering any. No? Well, there may be some. Anyway, these are some of... Whenever he appears, he is creating some kind of havoc in the plot. He's a catalyst. Can anyone remember in the 10th canto where he appears? Kamsa, yes. Everything is going fine after Krishna has been born. You know, Devaki and Vasudeva have suffered and jailed. Kamsa killed all their children. And then when Durga, Maya Devi, appears as the eighth child, Kamsa becomes very pious, lets them out of jail, and apologizes and promises to behave himself. And then Narada Muni comes to him and says, "You know that Krishna has been born, the one who's going to kill you, just somewhere else." And then he gets all mad again and he puts Vasudeva and Devaki back in jail and he curses himself for being so nice and promises never to do it again. And then he begins a campaign to kill all the children that have been born in the last so many days. So anyway, all of these things are stimulated by Narada Muni. at that point. Any other times you can remember in the 10th canto? What is it? Oh, he said Kala Yavana. Oh. Okay. So Narada sent them to be killed. And, yes, Manigriva and Nalakuvera. Yes, this. And that's in the, yeah, they're the Damodar Leela. They're the two gods who became cursed by Narada Muni to stand as trees. Okay. Where else can you recall? Any other appearances? Yes, definitely today. He's coming to see Krishna directly. I'm trying to remember any other appearances in the 10th canto. Not coming to mind. Okay. So let's read this. This is Krishna, Narada visiting Dwarka. Chapter 22, page 318. Chapter 22, Narada, the many Krishnas. When Narada, the mystic, heard that Krishna had been wed so many times, an inspiration filled his saintly head. I must observe how Krishna, in a single body, gives sufficient time to 16,000 wives. How does he live? When Narada reached Dwarka, the sounds of birds and bees filled up the parks and greens of that municipality. As swans and cranes sang out refrains on lotus-covered lakes, the sage found temples, streets, and houses built without mistakes. A web of spotless boulevards traversed the smooth terrain. Festoons and trees lined arteries and kept out sun and rain. 900,000 palaces lined brilliant avenues, each marble mansion trimmed in silver set with rows of jewels. A certain lovely area of Dwarka stood out. The sage saw this was Krishna's own domain, without a doubt. As Vishvakarma's masterpiece, where gods were often seen, its 16,000 palaces were home to Krishna's queens. The palaces had coral pillars set with gems that shone. The walls were decked with sapphires, pearls, and other precious stones. The sage walked in a palace and saw serving maids who wore expensive jeweled lockets as they floated through their chores. The well-dressed palace guards allowed the sage to freely roam. He noticed that the ornate palace rooftops were the home of dancing, joyous peacocks who were pleased and cried aloud as they mistook the palace incense smoke for thunderclouds. When Narada saw Krishna, Krishna's wife, with yak-tail fan, was fanning him, despite the 1,000 maids at her command. Lord Krishna, seeing Narada, arose and touched his feet. With folded palms he bowed and offered Narada his seat. Delighted with his guest, Lord Krishna bathed his holy feet and put the water on his head. Although he is complete within himself, Lord Krishna showed how one receives a saint. Aware of Krishna's purpose, Narada made no complaint. When all the proper rituals of welcome were complete, Lord Krishna spoke to Narada in phrases nectar sweet. O Master, are there any goods or deeds we may provide? Saint Narada was smiling as he thoughtfully replied, Almighty Lord, you rule the worlds. You're everybody's friend, yet you subdue the rogues and thieves who constantly offend. I only ask your blessings and the power to recall your lotus feet forever. I want nothing else at all. The saintly guest excused himself and went outside to see still further demonstrations of Lord Krishna's potency. Inside the next large palace, he saw Krishna playing dice with Uddhava. Surprised to see him, Krishna said, How nice! The Lord continued, When did you arrive? I'm very pleased to have an unexpected guest with saintly qualities. The Lord seemed unaware of their encounter just before. Surprised, the sage said nothing, took his leave, and went next door. In this abode, he found the Lord in warm parental mood. In others, he was bathing, saying prayers, and serving food. In others, he was holding morning sacrifice, and yet, in others, he behaved as if the sun already set. The Lord engaged in sword practice in one palatial home, while elsewhere riding elephants, and elsewhere, near his throne, at rest, nearby, while nearby poets sang his praise. The sage observed the Lord consulting, eating, playing sports, and being served. The Lord was somewhere giving cows to elevated priests, and elsewhere he was listening to Vedic histories. In one abode, the Lord engaged in joking with his wife, while elsewhere holding rituals, enriching family life. In one abode, Lord Krishna meditated on himself. Since he is God, how could he meditate on someone else? He served his elders elsewhere. Somewhere else he planned for war, while planning pious peacemaking with Balaram next door. Sage Narada saw Krishna make arrangements for his sons and daughters to wed brides and grooms approved by everyone. He saw the Lord send out some couples, others he brought back for festive celebrations with the crowds they would attract. Sometimes Lord Krishna worshipped gods, while sometimes he'd erect fine gardens, wells, and temples that the public would respect. He'd mount a handsome Sindhi horse and ride off to pursue the fearsome forest animals as kings would sometimes do. The sage observed the Lord don clothes of ordinary kind and walk the streets to understand the common person's mind. All-knowing Krishna, incognito? Kings may be required to do such things, but not the Lord, so Narada inquired. By studying your countless mystic potencies firsthand, it's clear to me you far exceed what I could understand. Would you be kind and bless me with an everlasting tour to loudly sing the glories that are so distinctly yours? Lord Krishna said, Dear Narada, I sense that you're disturbed. My actions simply show how one should live within this world. You saw me worship gods, and when you came, I worshipped you. I did all this to demonstrate what mankind needs to do. Because I bathed your lotus feet, you're feeling some distress. Although I'm God and you're my son, was that erroneous? For sons to touch their fathers with their feet shows disrespect. But if his son climbs in the father's lap, will he object? In every palace, Narada saw Krishna's matching form engaged in every pious duty householders perform. This vision was a special gift to Narada that day, and as the sage departed, he was thoroughly amazed. While keeping 16,000 queens romantically inclined, Lord Krishna mimicked human life and helped improve mankind. If someone chants or hears about Lord Krishna's daily deeds, his quest for love of God is surely destined to succeed. Lord Krishna's daily life. Queen Rukmini would greet the rooster's crowing with a curse. Each dawn it broke the Lord's embrace, in which she was immersed. The fragrant breeze and buzzing bees would rouse the sleeping birds, who woke the Lord with songs as sweet as fine poetic words. Despite that most auspicious hour, Rukmini felt grief. For her, the night at Krishna's side was always much too brief. The Lord would rise for daily chores. For her, that was a shame, and all his 16,000 other wives felt just the same. The Lord got up before the dawn, touched water, and began to meditate upon the Lord, like any pious man. To contemplate the self-illumined Absolute Supreme dispels the painful woes of this illusory regime. The Lord then bathed and dressed himself, and in the Vedic way, held ritual oblations to receive the coming day. He said the sacred Gayatri, and hailed the rising sun. He prayed to gods, his ancestors, and sages, one by one. The self-contained Lord Krishna worshipped Brahmins every day with herds of decorated cows and words of thoughtful praise. Each cow had silver-plated hooves and horns adorned with gold, and ample milk to feed her calf, each less than 1 year old. Lord Krishna dressed in articles identified with him, his yellow silks, his garlands, and his famed Kushtuba gem. He saw and touched auspicious things and then, the histories tell, gave gifts to all his ministers and citizens as well. He passed out garlands, sandal paste, and pawn to everyone, including wives, advisors, priests, and friends. When that was done, he'd take some for himself and then await his charioteer, who, guiding steeds and chariot, would punctually appear. Both Satyaki and Uddhava would join him for the drive. The palace women watched him leave with bashful, loving eyes. To let Lord Krishna leave was hard, his many wives would find. As he drove off, his loving smiles entranced the women's minds. As 16,000 Krishnas bid their loving wives goodbye, each Krishna could be only seen by those who lived nearby. Converging at Sudharma, the celestial meeting hall, a single Krishna entered from the confluence of all. This meeting hall gave anyone who entered quick relief from hunger, thirst, illusion, aging, death, and every grief. As Krishna sat upon his throne, his own effulgent light illumined all around him like the moonshine fills the night. A host of entertainment instantaneously ensued. First, jesters pleased the Lord with an array of comic moods. Performers sang and danced with zest as fine musicians played. Then poets and historians recited Krishna's praise. Jailed king's plea for help. One day, as certain priests intoned the sacred Vedic hymns and others told the stories of renowned religious men, a messenger arrived. The sentries brought the special guest to Krishna's court with this report and staggering request. My lord, with folded palms I come, dispatched by many kings who lost their rightful kingdoms and are greatly suffering. Jarasandha imprisoned 20,000 who refused to aid his evil conquests. They have sent me with this news. O endless Krishna, who destroys your disciples' terrors, we selfish kings are scared and beg for your holy shelter. As worldly people, we did not heed your good instructions, so you have come as time and humbled us with destruction. O Lord of all, who has descended to save the pious, we must confess that there is something that mystifies us. Jarasandha has broken all Vedic regulations, yet he's been able to put us in such tribulation. Our happy royal lives were simply a grand illusion. We clutched our problems and threw out their ideal solution, devotion to your lotus feet, made without condition. And now our bodies are but corpses with big positions. Since you remove the grief of those who bow down before you, release us from our chains of agony, we implore you. Jarasandha has captured us like a herd of cattle, but you defeated him in 17 famous battles. You then allowed him to defeat you for your own purpose, but that filled him with so much pride that he freely hurts us. Because we are your devotees, he chose us to step on. Please rectify our plight with your deadly chakra weapon. The messenger continued, these incarcerated kings aspire for your presence and the freedom that it brings. They sent me with this message and submit to your control, so kindly show your mercy to these troubled royal souls. Narada's advice. At this time, unexpectedly, Saint Narada appeared, his face aglow and head adorned with tresses long unsheared. Delighted, Krishna stood, prepared a seat, and bowed his head. Completing proper greetings, Krishna welcomed him and said, this great soul, who can travel through the universe at will, today has blessed our city. We are strengthened and fulfilled. Dear Narada, since everything is surely known to you, please tell us what the Pandavas, our friends, intend to do. The saintly sage said, your illusory might bewilders Brahma and has made him contrite. My lord, I am therefore not slightly surprised you ask this of me and maintain your disguise. Creator of all, no one knows except you what future may come and what others may do. Because we're caught up in this death and rebirth, you kindly descend to enlighten the earth. You know everything, yet because you have asked, I'll tell you King Yudhisthira plans a great task. To please you, he'll hold at incredible price the Rajasuya, the supreme sacrifice. Great monarchs and gods will attend this event, all eager to see you. If you should consent to build the participant's spiritual wealth and bless the occasion by coming yourself. Your presence is needed. It's well understood that you represent the auspicious and good. With you as one's shelter, success is assured. You even make pure Ganges water more pure. When Narada was finished, a debate at once ensued. The name Jarasandha put many in a fighting mood, though Yudhisthira insisted Krishna's presence was required. Lord Krishna saw Uddhava there and smilingly inquired, "You are indeed our closest friend and farthest seeing guide. We trust your expert counsel and shall do as you decide." Uddhava, seeing Krishna thus pretend to be confused, accepted his instruction and suggested what to do. So here is, we see these intimate glimpses of Lord Krishna, his life with his wives and his palaces. And Narada, of course, is going to every palace and seeing Krishna do something in every one. So, of course, this allows Narada to keep his curse from Daksha intact. He doesn't stay more than 3 minutes in any palace. It just goes on and on. And he also gets to see how Krishna is not attached to any good or bad that we might be in this material world. In one place, he is planning for war. Okay? So he's got that side. So war also comes from God. And then one palace, he's planning for peace. And we understand that's also coming from him. So his front side or his back side, everything comes from God. It's just people who have a relative vision who make judgments. See? And think somehow that some evil exists in this world separately from God. So that was one lesson from that. We also see Krishna doing the karmakanda activities of pious householders, like going to church might be by equivalent in our society, or giving charity to the poor. So Krishna is doing these things, even though they're inferior to love of God, as all scriptures explain. So Narada is also confused by the fact that Krishna washes his feet and worships the demigods. So at the conclusion of his visit, Narada says to Krishna, "I would just like the blessing to always chant your glories." He only asks for that, but Krishna gives him more. And he says, "I know that you're confused by what you've seen here today. So I am doing what I'm doing just to teach mankind how ideal householders should live." So what is a verse in the Bhagavad Gita that corroborates this? Yad yad acharati shrestha tad tad eva tarojana siyat gumanam kurute lokayam anavartate. So in this chapter, which is the ninth chapter, I believe, of the Gita, Krishna, is it fourth chapter? Third chapter. Yeah, that's right, on duties. So Krishna is talking about how everybody has duties, and even great saintly kings have duties. And then he says, "I myself have no duties, but still I work. Because if I didn't work, everyone would stop working and follow my example." So therefore he works to set an example. And he lives like a pious householder to set an example. So this is part of God's pastimes. You see, people think God is impersonal because he couldn't be an ordinary person like we have in our experience. So Krishna does both very extraordinary things that show he is not just an ordinary person. And at the same time, he does very ordinary things to teach by example how to behave. So he's so great, he encompasses both. So these are some things from this chapter. Okay, okay.
Why does Krishna worship
the gods? Why does Krishna worship the gods? Because ordinary, materially attached people should also worship the gods. Even if one has material desires, there are Vedic rites that they can perform and be purified. This is also explained in the Bhagavad Gita. Right? They have devotion for other gods, which was meant for me alone. But by their endeavor to serve these demigods, their faith becomes steady. And so they gradually progress. This is what Krishna explains. Yes, that's the point. He is accommodating everybody, intelligent, not intelligent, wicked, pious. Everybody is accommodated by Krishna. See, we make distinctions, but he makes no distinction. He accommodates everyone's desire.
Can Krishna Krishna book, I noticed that it ends with Narada going to Krishna's palace. He didn't have like this extra section. Like, I know I read this one about when Krishna
Yeah, that's the next chapter. These are done sequentially. Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Then yeah. There's a third volume. There is a third volume. Wow, you have wonderful pastimes awaiting you. Be very careful. Yeah, you have to be very careful buying books in India. Yeah, so yeah, there are actually another roughly 30 chapters after that, 20 or 30 chapters. Yeah. Okay. Yes, Sagar. How should we address the address people who say we're worshiping gods? After all, Krishna worshipped demigods.
Yeah.
I think Lord Ram also in one occasion. Yeah.
So,
there's different ways. We can answer by saying, well, Krishna also lifted Govardhan Hill, so you could imitate that pastime. You know, Krishna can do things that we can't do. Okay, or Krishna... Okay, still... okay, well, it depends on where they're at. Okay, if they are serious about spiritual life, you can talk to them in that way and say that was just an inferior duty and not necessarily to be imitated by devotees. If you want to be a materialist, successful materialist, then you do like that. It's just like Sanatana Goswami and the touchstone, remember? Sanatana, the great sage, had a stone which turned ordinary metal into gold. So this materially motivated person heard about it. He asked the sage, actually, who can give me the most valuable thing in the world? And he said, well, Sanatana Goswami has a stone that turns metal into gold. He said, oh, that must be it. So he ran to Sanatana. And he said, you please give me the most valuable thing. And Sanatan said, you mean my touchstone? Yes, your touchstone. Well, okay, it's over there in the garbage, in the dumpster. So the man ran and he was looking through the trash and then he said, wait a minute. I wanted the most valuable thing. If this is the most valuable thing, why is it in the garbage? So he came back and complained. And so Sanatan said, well, if you want the most valuable thing, then here's the Maha Mantra. So it's like that. If people are materially ambitious, they should worship the gods. But then we don't have much time for them. So that's why it's an offense to the holy name to consider it one of the karmakandiya activities. See? To just think, I'm chanting for money. With every round, my bank account is growing, increasing. There was a popular mantra in the 70s. Do anyone remember this? Nam-myoho-renge-kyo. Still popular. If you chant this mantra and think about what you want intensely, then it magically gives you what you want. So it's a very popular mantra in certain circles. So we're all kind of homogenous. We just want Krishna's service. Hare Krishna. You know. So we're not so imaginative. But we can want to serve Krishna in particular ways. So also there's individuality. Did you? Ankush, yeah. Sudharma is this meeting, celestial meeting hall. I believe it's built by Vishwakarma. Or is it Maya Dhanava? Vishwakarma, okay. He built this in such a way as a feature in Dwarka, that anyone who entered it would become freed from old age, disease, and death. So that was where they would assemble every day. And the first thing that happened when they'd have their assembly, what was the first thing on the docket? Yes, the comedians. So that would lighten the mood. So everyone would be coming from their morning oblations and get together, and then the first thing the comedians would perform. There was one famous gesture, Gopal Bone. He was very clever, and he would always entertain the king, and the king liked him so much that he could say things to the king that no one else would say. So one morning the king was angry at him, and he said, "Gopal, what is the difference between you and an ass?" And Gopal takes 3 steps towards the king. He says, "About 3 steps." One morning the king said, "So Gopal, how are you feeling this morning?" He said, "I am feeling very well, having passed stool." And the king was disgusted. He said, "Why do you say such a thing?" So he said, "One day I'll show you. I will show you." So one day they were traveling on the river in a boat, Gopal and the king. And the king said to the boatman, "Go over to the shore. I need to evacuate my bowels." And Gopal said, "Oh, no, no, not there, not there. It's very dangerous there. There are tigers." So they went on some time, and then the king said, "Pull over immediately. I must stop." He said, "Oh, no, no, not there. There's dangerous aborigines." This way he kept delaying and delaying. Finally the king said, "Just pull the boat over." And he went off to the bushes. Then he came back, and Gopal said, "So how are you feeling?" "How are you feeling?" I said, "I'm feeling very good." "So now you understand how I was feeling." So anyway, there are many stories like this. The king had a child. Oh, he was supposed to be feeling very jubilant because the king had a child. And he said instead, "I'm feeling very happy because I've just passed stool." So anyway, so many stories. Krishna doesn't need, did Krishna need the gestures to entertain him? And of course the answer is no. To put him in a good mood. Krishna is Atmarama. He's completely self-contained. But the gestures need engagement. And some people like to make others laugh. I took a course once in the psychology of humor. And do you know why some of the reasons people laugh? One of the main reasons people laugh is when they feel no threat from the comedian. In other words, when a person feels superior to the person who's speaking, then they laugh at them. Laughing means, "I have no threat from you whatsoever." So one tactic of comedy is to play the fool. So the comedian will act very stupid, you know. Yeah. Can anyone think of an example, a joke? Like, what's that? What is an example of humor in which one presents himself as the inferior? I was, okay, can you think of one, Zach?
Well, there's so many movies where the human is trying to find somebody getting injured.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh, doing really stupid things. Yeah. Yeah, somebody is doing something dumb, and the audience thinks that's funny. I went to the grocery store the other day, and I was standing in front of the frozen food section for a long time. And somebody came up to me and said, "What are you doing?" I said, "Well, I was just looking at the orange juice here, and it says concentrate." So the That's not a true story. Very good. See, nobody's afraid of Zach now. Well, there's two guys walked into a bar and they say to everybody, "Drinks on the house. We've just completed a great task." And so everybody's congratulating them and applauding. Say, "What did you do?" He said, "Well, we just assembled a jigsaw puzzle." And say, "Well, and, oh yeah, and it only took us a day." And they said, "Well, what's so great about that?" "Well, on the box it said from 2 to 4 years." So you see how humor refreshes the morning mood. So, let's see, what else? There are some other... So then we end this chapter, or this section, with Krishna in the court, and then these two urgent messages come to him, conflicting messages. One comes from the messenger who says these kings have been imprisoned by Jarasandha. And they're all in great peril and great anxiety. So you must come and rescue them. And these kids